listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is brought to you by the Institute of Culinary Education in the heart of New York City. The Institute of Culinary Education offers comprehensive career training programs in the culinary arts, pastry and baking arts, and culinary management in just 7 to 11 months. ICE also offers the largest program of hands-on recreational cooking, baking, and wine classes for all skill levels in your favorite global cuisines. Call 888-614-CHEF or visit iceculinary.com/heritage for more information. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Wides. I also happen to be an instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, so I can personally vouch for all of that and more. If you're a regular listener to the show, hopefully you are, just a quick apology about last week. Last week was supposed to be a special live show with some interview segments and things like that, but we had some scheduling issues. People didn't show up, and we also had a little bit of a technical glitch. So if you're listening live, sorry about that. You had an interesting mix of things. But we're back live this week, and everything's good, and it's a beautiful night here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and people are eating outside behind Roberta's, where the radio station is, and it feels like summer. Last week, also, I was going to mention, I installed my beehive here at Roberta's on the roof. I'm a new beekeeper. It's my first year. I was supposed to do it last year, but I couldn't get any bees because of the bee shortage. So I got my bees and I installed them in their hive last Monday. And they're very happy here because behind Roberta's is a gigantic garden and the bees are happy and the plants are happy. And so far, everybody's happy. I'm going to go up there tomorrow morning and puff out some smoke and open it up and check on their status. So throughout the course of the summer and the bee season, I'll be giving you little updates on the bees, and we'll follow their progress together. And if any listeners, if anyone out there is a beekeeper, I would love to hear from you so we can compare notes. Maybe we can have a sort of ongoing conversation about bees. So you can go to the Heritage Radio Network website and you can leave comments on the Why We Cook page and let me know. And I'm keeping the bees here specifically in Brooklyn because, well, A, I live here in Brooklyn, and B, I'm here every week doing my show so I can keep an eye on them, but also because there are so many gardens and roof deck gardens now, and the Brooklyn Grange is coming soon. If you don't know about that, the guys here at Roberta's are starting a rooftop farm in a couple of months. And I think that agriculture is the new black. It's the new industry here in Brooklyn. So I wanted the bees to be in on that. You know, they should get in at the ground floor of all the new urban agriculture. But also, I have a little weekend place upstate that I go to that, you know, is out in the woods and is surrounded by trees and grass and flowers and everything. But it's also surrounded by neighbors, some of whom weren't so keen on the idea of me having a beehive, which is ridiculous because honeybees are gentle creatures. But whatever, this is better because it's closer to home. And I can keep an eye on them and I can keep you updated on the bee project process. So anyway, speaking of my little garden, no, I didn't mention that, my little house. I have this little teeny tiny bungalow in a little old bungalow colony. If you're not from the New York area, you may not know about the whole bungalow colony phenomenon. Years ago, in the early part of the 20th century, people in New York would go up to, they called it the mountains, it was the Catskills, and they built these little colonies of bungalows, these little tiny houses sort of all clustered together, and that's where people would go on weekends and in the summer and spend their summers there. And then as people moved from the city out to the suburbs, became more affluent, air travel became more affordable, most of them were sold off, abandoned, developed, you know, as people were able to spend summers at their suburban houses, or, you know, for many reasons. But this one has survived. It's called Reynolds Hills, and it has survived. And it's pretty amazing that it's survived this long. It's been run as a cooperative community now for over 70 years, I think. So it's pretty cool. there are actually a couple of houses available right now. If you're interested in checking those out, you can go to ReynoldsHills.org and check out the website. But anyway, at my little bungalow, I have a little garden. Everything I do is small. I'm very small. I have a tiny house. I have a tiny garden. Everything is small. So I have this tiny little garden that is not in the ground. It's a pot garden. You know, I don't grow pot. It's in pots, in planters, because we have many animals who like to dig things up and eat everything that I grow. So I have it all in planters and in big pots. And we found this old pine bed frame in the garbage one summer. We find a lot of stuff in the garbage. So we kind of chopped up the pine bed frame a couple weeks ago and made a fence that we wrapped around the garden. So now it's all fenced in and it's safe. If you listen to the show, you may have remembered that last year I had these tomatoes that were beautiful and perfect and ripe and all ready to be eaten. And I had them wrapped in wire mesh, and I took off the mesh and I went out to take a swim. And when I came back, a groundhog had eaten them down to the stumps, and it was devastating. So this year, no groundhogs. Nothing's getting in there. So it's fenced off completely. And the fence I love is made from junk from the garbage. But anyway, so I have this little garden, but I'm an impatient gardener. I don't have the patience. I don't have a lot of patience. I do when I'm teaching at ICE. I'm very patient with my students. Some things I'm very patient, some I'm not. So when I'm looking at seed packets, or I'm in the, you know, gardening store, you know, you pick up the seed packet and it says ready to harvest in 70 days, ready to harvest in 100 days. I don't want to wait 70 or 100 days. I want immediate gratification. I live in the modern digital era. Everything is instant. So I really want to grow stuff from seed. I love the process of that. Like, oh, I put a seed in the ground and now look, I have something edible. So I buy the seeds that say things like harvest in 21 days or harvest in 30 days. It's much more gratifying. So that's why I grow things like radishes, which even though I don't really like them that much, I still grow them because you get almost instant results. You get radishes in like 3 weeks practically. So I generally, you know, I pick that sort of stuff out. But I can't resist seed packets. I find them so beautiful. The pictures are so lush and colorful, and they're so seductive. I think seed packets for me are probably a lot like jewelry is for other women, because I don't really care that much about jewelry. But to me, seed packets are sparkly and shiny and full of possibility and full of promise. But I know myself, I know my capacity, I know my limits. So I've learned to limit myself to certain seeds like radishes, which grow quickly, or little lettuces that come up in a couple of weeks. I already picked some of my little lettuces, or sugar snap peas, which come up pretty fast. Everything else, I just buy plants, you know, little tomato plants, things that are started from seed by somebody else, because I just don't have the time for that. And all that stuff you start indoors anyway, like in January. And in the middle of January, February, who's thinking about that? I can barely get my laundry done. But sometimes I feel like a little bit of like a cheater, like I'm a garden cheater buying plants. If I were like a hardcore gardener, I wouldn't even be buying seeds. I would be out there like foraging wild seeds and then planting them and then harvesting the seeds from those plants and drying them and gathering the best ones and doing genetic selective engineering on my seeds. But I'm a part-time gardener. I can't do that. And don't judge me anyway on that, because everybody cheats in their garden. Anyway, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about what's in the tiny garden. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by the award-winning Institute of Culinary Education in New York City. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And if you're a fan of this show, I would love to hear from you. You can leave comments on the Why We Cook page of heritageradionetwork.com. You can also find me on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. You can become a fan, leave comments, let me know what you think. So this week I'm talking about my impatientness, my lack of patience when it comes to gardening, and how I love to garden, but I don't like to wait for my stuff to grow. So I like to grow things that grow really fast and produce immediate results. That just reminded me of a book I used to, there was this story I really, really liked when I was a kid, and I can't remember what it was called. It just flashed into my head. It was about this guy who had all these kids, and they lived in this, on this farm that had been a lake, and one night, suddenly the lake evaporated overnight, and there were all these fish left, and they would put seeds in the ground, and the land was so rich that those seeds would grow overnight. I don't remember. Something about how the sun was shining, and it was, then they had a cold snap and they froze the sunshine in jars and they called it liquid sunshine. Anybody, this sound familiar to anyone? Did I just dream this? Anyway, back to what we were talking about. So the garden. So I planted these little lettuces this year that are called speckled trout. They're totally cute little lettuce. They're green, of course, with little red spots on them. I planted them the first weekend of April and they're already like 3 inches high. And so I picked some and ate it this weekend. And that is what I call garden gratification. I basically was able to harvest lettuce within the month of April. And I think it's because we had some freakishly warm weather early in April. It gave me a jump start, because normally I would have only been planting my stuff the last couple of weeks. And I'm already picking it. And I also got some Hudson Valley arugula from the Hudson Valley Seed Library. And I already picked some of that too. So it's been great. And I do, of course, have to grow tomatoes every year, because you can't buy, you can buy tomatoes, of course, in the summer, but growing your own tomatoes is one of life's most gratifying experiences. The tomato is the most commonly grown fruit and or vegetable grown in American gardens. Did you know that? More people grow tomatoes than anything else. So I bought some tomato plants last Friday at the Union Square Market. I always buy them from the same guys. They sell these nice heirloom tomatoes. And I put those in, and hopefully I will dodge the tomato blight bullet yet again. I did last year. And the new fence will hopefully keep that effing groundhog out, because, like I said, he got in there last year and down to the stumps, nothing. And so a new thing this year for me is that I'm actually growing collard greens. And a couple months ago, I did a show on greens, and I talked a lot about collards and how they're so incredibly nutritious and also incredibly delicious. And I wasn't planning on growing collards at all this summer, but I was wandering around Walmart's garden department late one night last month. And I know, don't jump all over me. I know I shouldn't be shopping at Walmart. I know they're evil. I try to never, ever go in there. I actually find it incredibly depressing in there. But occasionally, I do go in there because they have really good prices on gigantic bags of dirt. Potting soil is cheap at Walmart. So sometimes I go in there and I do feel sufficiently guilty and hate myself for weeks afterwards. So it's all right. And they're open late, which I like, because I like to go in there late at night and shop in their garden department, because there's no one in there and it's outside and it's dark and cool. And there's something kind of really thrilling and secretive about it, about wandering the garden department at night. It's like you sort of expect like things to happen, you know, the plants to all get up and start dancing, or, you know, illicit activities going on. There's like all this fertility and growth going on in the dark. But anyway, as usual, because it's Walmart, the store was totally picked over and there was very little stock of anything, and it was a total mess. At least the Walmart I go to is like that. And also there were no bouncing smiley faces following me around like in their ads. I kept looking behind me for one. And of course, there were almost no good vegetable plants left, because they're always picked over there. they only had things like broccoli. Now, broccoli's great. I love broccoli, but why grow your own broccoli? Really, if you're growing in containers anyway, you're limited on space. You're going to grow broccoli. You're going to get one head of broccoli per plant. And what's the point? And you wait all summer for it. I like to grow things where it grows, I pick it, and it grows back, like lettuce or sugar snaps, and it just keeps producing. That's my kind of gardening. Keeps producing, and it produces early and often. So instead of the broccoli, I saw that sitting there were these little six packs of collard green plants that nobody was buying. There was lots and lots of them. And I love greens, and I've been eating a lot of them lately. So I thought, why not? Let's grow some greens. So I bought two little six packs, put them in planters, and boom, like overnight, they took off. They've probably tripled in size in the last 4 weeks. And I'm already harvesting those too. And you know, you think of collard greens as something you have to buy, and they're gigantic, like 2 foot long leaves, but you don't. You can pick them really young and eat them young and tender, and you can actually eat them raw when they're tender, and they're really good that way. Can't do that with broccoli. You have to wait for it to grow. So I've been picking off all the biggest leaves and eating them, and I just roll them up and slice them into a fine chiffonade. Chiffonade is when you cut leafy things into fine ribbons. If you took a class at ICE, you would learn how to do it, perhaps. And then I just sautéed them with a lot of garlic and olive oil and a little bit of dried red pepper flakes and these Vietnamese fried shallots that I like that come in a jar and they're crispy and delicious. So I just sautéed all of that. And then I opened up a little can of whole baby clams in juice. Yes, I know, canned clams. I haven't eaten those since we used to eat them in the 70s at home in spaghetti. But I got those at Marshall's. You know Marshall's, like the clothing store? Marshall's has this housewares department in the back that sells the wackiest stuff. Sometimes I get organic olive oil there. I've gotten sea salt there, smoked pimenton, raw honey. And last year I got all these little cans of whole clams from Maine for $1.50 a can. And they're really good. So anyway, I threw the clams in there too. Started to cook that all down. And then I threw in a couple of tablespoons of whole wheat couscous that I had laying around, and I covered it and just let the couscous suck up the clam juice and the oil and the garlic. And then I ate the entire pan of it, and it was mighty tasty. It was really good, and the whole thing took like 8 minutes. And that is why we cook, because if we know what we're doing, we can make something as exceptionally delicious as that in like under 10 minutes. And the collards, as I've discovered, are way better when they're young and tender. And you don't have to cook them until they totally dissolve. You just cook them like kale or like spinach until they wilt and they get nice and soft and supple. So I'm very pleased with my Walmart garden purchase, even if I didn't start them from seeds and it's sort of cheater gardening. I'm still getting great results from that. We have to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in the garden. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Our show tonight is sponsored by the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. So I've been talking tonight about my little garden, my little wee garden penned in near my little wee bungalow up in northern Westchester. And I've been talking about this garden, about how I like to grow things that provide fairly immediate gratification. I'm not in it for the long haul. I'm not planting pumpkins. I don't want to wait until October. I want stuff now. And there are some vegetables that I'm just not even going to bother with. Some vegetables you just leave to the experts, like asparagus. Asparagus is a plant that you have to plant 1 year, and then you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And every year, you let it come back, and it comes back, and it comes back, and it comes back, and it gets thicker and thicker. And then finally, you can eat it. It takes a good couple of years until you get asparagus that you can eat. So that's fine if you have land and you have space. Please plant asparagus. I can't do it because I only have containers. So, and I don't have the foresight to plan my asparagus eating years in advance. So it's just not going to happen for me in my garden. You know, it's a patience issue yet again. But my friend Suki Jamison, who owns Jamison Lamb out in Pennsylvania, has an amazing patch of asparagus. I went out there a couple of years ago to do an internship with him to learn about lamb farming. And it was in early April, and so she was getting her asparagus ready to go. So what she does is after she harvests her asparagus in the summer, then she burns the whole thing back. She just kind of lights the whole, she puts straw on it and lights it on fire. And that helps to kind of burn it back, but it also adds lots of nutrients back into the dirt. And what I loved about her method of gardening also was her compost kind of skips the whole compost heap step. So she just basically takes her scraps from the kitchen and throws them out the kitchen door into the asparagus patch where the stuff just kind of rots and goes back into the field that way. No compost bin for Suki. She just goes right from the kitchen to the garden, which I sort of liked. But I didn't get to eat any of her asparagus because I was out there in early April and there wasn't any yet. But I did eat a lot of lamb. I was there for 3 weeks, and I think we ate lamb 17 out of 21 days, which is okay because I love lamb and they have good lamb. But I also really love rhubarb. Have I ever talked about rhubarb here before? I'm not sure. But rhubarb is the same kind of thing. You have to plant it, and then you have to wait years because it comes back. It's a perennial, but it comes back small, and then it comes back the next year bigger, and you have to wait a few years. So I have these three little tiny baby rhubarb plants, and I have to like tie myself down not to just cut them and eat them this year because they need at least another year. They are definitely my exercise in patience. It's like the Zen approach to gardening, and I'm trying. It's like training for the marathon. You know, you just have to keep doing it and keep doing it, and you know the payoff will come. But asparagus and rhubarb are both in season now, more or less, just about. And most of it is, at least the asparagus is still coming up from Mexico, but the local stuff will be around soon. The rhubarb's good now. You should eat them now, asparagus and rhubarb, even if you're not growing them, because they're in season. And they're like, you know, like strawberries. You should eat them when they're in season. Eat as much as you possibly can of them. Get completely sick of them, and then don't eat them anymore when the season's over, because that's how you learn to really appreciate the cycles of nature. And you eat so much of it that you get sick of it, and then you're not craving it anymore. And then by the time you start craving it, it'll be next spring, and it'll be time to eat it again. So today I was teaching a little private class up in Connecticut, and we did a really nice dish where we used raw asparagus. We took a peeler and shaved the asparagus down into like really thin ribbons and tossed that with shaved raw fennel and served it with some slow roasted fish. And that was really good. And you just kind of toss it with like a little mustardy vinaigrette. You can do a lot of vegetables this way. I like to take zucchini and take a vegetable peel or two and just make really thin ribbons and then toss that with like maybe a little like a miso dressing. Artichoke hearts too, if you shave them super, super thin, really nice raw also. Or you can take these really thin raw vegetables and just toss them in a hot pan for like, you know, 20 seconds. But, you know, you want to cook them really quick so they don't wilt. Now, I know this show is called Why We Cook, not Why We Shave, but some of these raw vegetables, thinly shaved, are great. And you know me, I'm not a huge advocate of the whole raw diet thing. I think it's, you know, leading to shrinkage of brain mass, basically. But some vegetables, when they're in season, that you normally would only want to cook can be eaten raw. And they're really good. Even rhubarb, which I mentioned a minute ago, I've eaten that raw. You just slice it up really thin and toss it with a little bit of honey and a little bit of sherry vinegar. It's really good raw. It's really tart and crunchy. You can't eat a lot of it, and it can make your mouth hurt, but a little bit of it, really crispy, really raw, it's like a really nice kind of sensory change. Because generally, we think of rhubarb as something you'd eat stewy. And it's really, you know, that's great. It's the way to go. So you just cook it down with sugar, and you get this great rhubarb-like compote or jam. And that's because rhubarb is naturally full of pectin, and pectin is that stuff that makes jam thick. If you've ever made jam, you have to add pectin. So when you cook rhubarb with other fruit, it'll also help to compensate for their lack of pectin. It'll kind of thicken them up. So I like to just cook rhubarb down with spices and sugar and maybe a little bit of vinegar. I like to make it more like a chutney, like a sweet and sour, spicy kind of mixture, my rhubarb. And you just kind of cook it until it collapses and then take it off the stove. Don't go too far. And once you have that rhubarb gloop that you've made, you can serve it with anything. You can serve it like over grilled fish. It's really good with cheese. You can put it on sandwiches. I like to stir it into yogurt, put it in my oatmeal, because if you know me, you know I love everything in my oatmeal. So you can do it that way, you know, or try it raw. It's really good raw too. But, you know, if you really want to grow your own, remember that it's going to take you a couple years to produce that rhubarb. If you're like me, you don't have a lot of patience, I would recommend going out and buying it. I saw it at the farmer's market the other day. It's in town. It's local. It's time. Rhubarb is here. You know, it's the rhubarb ramps asparagus season. So get out there and get them while they're in season, because they won't be here for very long. They're very fleeting. So I just want to mention one quick note before we have to say goodbye for the night. This Saturday, May 8th, my friend Serena Jain, who is the creator of the Masala Bhangra Bollywood workout, is having a 10th anniversary celebration at the Red Bull Space in Manhattan, and it's a benefit for the Susan J. Komen Foundation for Breast Cancer Research. So if you're interested, you can go to masaladance.com, M-A-S-A-L-A, dance.com, and get a ticket and come on down. There's going to be great food from Ama Restaurant, Indian food, and a live band, and fun, and dancing, and should be a great time, and it benefits a great charity, and I'll be there. So that's about all the time we have for tonight. I'll be giving you another little report on the garden and the bees next week, along with lots of other useful Why We Cook information. So until then, see you next week. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.